finding the morning papers is hard to find in the magazines. It doesn't matter what show you tune in, it's hard to find on TV screen, but it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio. Talk is all you get, and you wanna hear it straight. There's a place to find all the answers.
AM, FM, shortwave, talk radio.
The truth is on talk radio.
All right, folks, we are back. Mike in Arizona, we're running short of time. Anything else you got?
Okay, hey, I just want to make a couple other points. You know, we're talking about a lot of anniversaries. Yesterday was the beginning of the 1967 war, the Six-Day War.
June 8th, 1967, yes. That's correct.
No, June 5th.
June 8th, I thought.
No, that was the Liberty.
Oh, okay, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry.
Okay, and tomorrow, the 7th of June, 1981, that's when Israel bombed Iraq's nuclear power plant, and they were condemned by UN Security Council Resolution 487. You know, I'm not a big fan of the United Nations, but, you know, if that's the system that's in place, why does it seem that there's scads of resolutions that have been issued against Israel to get out of the occupied territories, to turn over their nuclear facilities to the IAEA, to compensate Iraq for the damage they admitted that they've done?
Right.
Why haven't they been held accountable?
Good question. Mike, thanks for your call.
Later.
All righty. Vandy in Illinois. Hello.
My God, the two top guns are RBN. Hey, John. Hey, Mike.
How you
hey,
doing?
What's going on?
Well, I threw out my last history book last night, and I can give you the official number of who bought it during that Second World War. The number is 271,301.
Uh-oh. Better be careful. You're going to end up in the same cell as Ernst Zundel. You're a Holocaust denier, my friend.
Well, you know, I don't know if you guys have seen this, but I guess this comes from the official records from the International Red Cross.
And well, you know, I'll tell you something. Aside from the number of Jews who did or did not die in World War II, you know, just set all that aside. I want to just think of it this way. If you go into the average public school in America and you take 30 kids out of all the different classes, mix it up, all races, creeds, and colors, as quote-unquote democratic as you can get, and you do a survey and ask them how many American soldiers, sailors, and military people in general died during World War II, I guarantee you that none of them will be able to answer the question. But if you ask them how many Jews died during World War II, probably 25 out of 30 will say 6 million. Right. Maybe I'm exaggerating. But see, that goes to show you where our priorities are in this country because of the nonstop bellowing by the media, this nonstop mantra about 6 million, 6 million, 6 million. And because of the 6 million, we have to support Israel. And if you don't support Israel, you're supporting the policies that led to the slaughter of 6 million.
Yeah.
It's very circular.
All right.
Come on, Mike. Come on, guys. You know they don't teach real history in the public school system.
Vandy, hey, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. All right. Ray in Texas. Hello, Ray. We got to make this quick because he only has a few minutes here. Ray, go ahead.
Okay. Hey, Mike's a buddy of mine there.
And, hey, Ray. How you doing?
Hey, you're talking about my territory being in the schools there and not teaching the right history, and you're exactly right. Listen, I just want to say hello from Texas to the fellow from the gentleman from Ohio who said he will be anti-Semitic until such and such happens. We're pretty plain spoken down here, and I agree with that gentleman 100%. Until these nice Jews and good Jews that you people talk about get off of that fence or get out of that closet and attack their racial kinsmen for the garbage that's going on in my country and around the world, then they are no more a friend of mine than anyone else. And they are anti-Gentile, they're anti-white, they're anti-my people. And so you damn right, I will be anti-Semitic and let them know it right up front until they straighten out. So,
all right.
Hey, my buddy in Ohio, thanks a lot, Bella. And hey, Mike, good talking with you.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you, Ray. You know, I should tell you, John, this is Professor Ray Goodwin. He spoke at the Barnes Review Conference, Barnes Review American Free Press Conference up here. Back in September, the one where you spoke.
Okay, well, yeah. Ray, well, then we must have met, or we shook hands, or we nodded at each other up there.
There you go.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, Ray, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Hey.
All right. Barbara in New Jersey. We got to roll these quick here. Hello, Barbara.
Hi. I disagree with what you're saying, because when you say that 2% of the population is Jewish and they're making all the trouble, that's like saying blacks are committing all the crimes. That is being prejudiced.
Well, wait a minute. What's the parallel? I mean, first of all, blacks don't commit all the crimes. But if you look I mean, blacks do not commit all the crimes. But if you look at the exact statistics released by police departments on the racial balance of crimes, you will find that blacks commit a disproportionate number of the crimes. It goes just the same way as if you look at the power
and
name
their names instead of condemning a whole race of people.
Well, I'm not condemning
People. No, Barbara, please do not. I think we've made this abundantly clear, and I know Michael Piper has, as well as I. This is not a condemnation against, as we use the analogy, against all Catholics, because the Vatican keeps protecting rather than ousting the homosexual priest. We are not condemning the entire Jewish race because they are Jewish. Please do not understand
When you say it's due to their culture and that Jews need to turn on Jews to be accepted by Gentiles, that does sound prejudiced.
When did anybody ever said that? When did either John or I, at any rate, say here that Jews, quote unquote, need to turn on Jews to become accepted? I never said that.
I'm referring to the last caller.
Well, okay, I can't be held. I mean, I didn't even pick that up. I don't think he ever suggested that. I don't think he suggested that. I don't know. I'd have to listen to that again. But Barbara,
that's like saying because we have in the Middle East, we have extremists, call them Al Qaeda or whatever you want to say. We're putting this in the popular monicum here of today speak. It's like saying that all Muslims on the face of this planet are evil and they all want to destroy Israel or the United States. That is not true. It's not a condemnation.
No, it would be like you were saying their culture is evil. Their culture is causing them to do what they do. They need to turn on each other.
No. I think what Michael said about people that are Jewish, they're not helping to expose criminals, whether it's Jewish or otherwise. They have got to quit sitting on the fence and remaining mum. This is why the organization of NutriCarty came on board, because they were tired of the Torah and its teachings being misrepresented by other people out there that claim to be Jewish. Now, these people up there aren't self-hating Jews. I know, Michael, you know the rabbi.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely not self-hating Jews.
No, absolutely not. So what they have done to come out to clean their own house and to reject those fence sitters, or how they like to put it, the people that are false Jews. Those are not my words. Those are their words.
Well, I'd like to know if you've ever been in a synagogue, if you've ever looked at what they teach there.
I don't think you want to go there. What's your name, Barbara? I don't think you want to go there, Barbara. I actually once attended a Jewish ceremony by accident. I went to hear a politician speak, not being aware. I knew it was going to be held at a synagogue, but it didn't occur to me that it was going to be held during the religious service. And frankly, that says a lot to me right there. Here was an American politician giving a pro-Israel speech during a religious ceremony. Now, that sounds to me like a merging of, well, not church and state, synagogue and state. Now, as far as some of the Jewish religious teachings, I am familiar with some of it because I've been provided a lot of literature, ancient and modern, by people who have studied it, and I can tell you that although I often hear about how terrible the Muslim Quran is, I do know that there's a lot of teachings in the Jewish religion that, although I'm not a real religious person, I come from a basically Christian background, I find them to be very anti-Christ. They are very anti-Christian, anti-black, for that matter, against black people. And so there's an ugly face to the Jewish religion that often manifests itself in Jewish influence and power in America. Now, I ask you, have you ever been to a religious ceremony? Are you familiar with the Jewish religion?
Yes, I am.
And would you not agree with me that some of those anti-Christian teachings are right out of the garbage can?
Okay, in all my experience in synagogues, I have never, ever heard anything anti-Christian. The only place I heard anything anti-Christian was on the internet, on sites put up by purported Christians exposing evil, the evil commandments of the Torah, which I cannot believe that, it's shocking to me. That's why I'd like to know. If someone's been in a synagogue and they heard a rabbi say, oh, yes, destroy the Gentiles, take advantage of them.
Well, first of all, Barbara, we can have this discussion. I have McFadden's statement that I want to read. Michael can only spend a few more minutes with us. We could carry out this debate with you for the next hour or two on the air. I've never said that I've gone into a synagogue and heard them preach against Christianity or Catholics or any other religion. I'm not saying that, but if you look at the bulk of the teachings outside of that and who is involved and their direct acts against this country, I am saying pay attention to it. That's what I'm saying. All right?
Okay.
All right. Well, I appreciate your call, Barbara, and please keep listening. We're not out here to...
See, John, Barbara means well. I don't think she's Jewish. I didn't get that from the approach that she took. I got the approach that Barbara is a non-Jewish person who is concerned about quote-unquote anti-Semitism, and when she hears these sensitive subjects being discussed, she reacts as people are programmed to react.
Exactly. Maggie in Texas. Hello, Maggie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, I am Jewish.
Okay.
I'm a supporter of RBN, long time, and like-minded other channels and broadcasters and networks. I intend to continue. I've learned a lot. And I am not on the fence. I'm totally against political Zionism and the horrible activities of the Anti-Defamation League.
Good for you.
What more can I say?
Let me make a couple of points here. First, Wolf Blitzer, that is his real name.
Okay.
Okay. I would like to know exactly how Jewish is being defined in terms of the amount of blood, actually. Is it somebody whose family is Jewish all the way back, as far as you know, on both sides? Is it someone who...
Yeah, Michael, what's the percentage, and how does one call themselves Jewish by birthright?
Well, you know, actually, that's a very good question. And, you know, let me put it this way. If you look even in Israel itself today, there's a major debate over who's a Jew, literally. If you check the Internet... with that phraseology, who's a Jew, and plug in the word Israel as well, you'll find that there's been this spirited debate in Israel for years. In my estimation, someone is a Jew, in my estimation, which is worth 50 cents, if that, in my estimation, someone is a Jew who defines himself as a Jew if they identify with the activities of the Jewish community in general. But there's a lot of people who consider themselves Jewish who never step into a synagogue in their life, and yet some of those people are some of the biggest supporters of the state of Israel. So I guess, Maggie, I'm not sure how you actually define it.
Okay.
But I'm just throwing that out there. I'd like your comments
right.
on it.
Okay, well, okay, there is a person, a priest, currently advertising right on this channel who makes the statement that W is a Jew. Now, John has said he supports that. I spent the day at the library trying to confirm it. And I would just like to know by what definition George W. Bush is a Jew, because I have a hunch it doesn't have to do with being Jewish on both sides of the family.
Okay, you've heard this one before, haven't you, Michael?
Yeah. Oh, I was confused at first, but okay. This story about George W. Bush, current president, being Jewish. There's several aspects to that. There have been a number of people who have traced back the Bush family heritage, and I've never been able to confirm it myself, but there are people who say that the Bush family were, in fact, at least the Bush family we're thinking of, were, in fact, Jewish Freemasonic leaders here in the United States. Now, I have also heard it alleged more recently, and again, I don't know this for a fact, I have heard it that Bush himself may have converted to Judaism privately. Again, I don't know that for a fact, but I've heard multiple stories relating to that topic.
Okay, thank you for your call, Maggie. One quick question for you, Michael, is the international banking system, the IMF, was or was that not started by a small Jewish cabal?
That came about, the original groundwork for that came about during the Roosevelt administration, Franklin Roosevelt administration, towards the end of World War II. They laid the groundwork for it. I believe Harry Dexter White was a part of that, and he was Jewish himself, a Jewish communist. And
we're talking about the federal. Now, we're not talking just about the Federal Reserve System, its octopus tentacles inside the United States, the private corporation. I am talking about the World Bank or the International Monetary
Correct,
Fund.
Exactly. And, yeah. And those two agencies, those, you know, quasi-governmental agencies, you know, they do literally have worldwide tentacles. And they are basically enforcement arms, or, you know, governmental enforcement arms for the private international banking system.
All right, what I'm going to attempt to do here in the next 40 minutes that I have here, and Michael, I thank you for coming
yeah,
on the program.
John, I'm glad I could come aboard at least for part of the hour. So,
well,
yeah.
I appreciate that very much, and your program is on the network Monday through Friday from 7 to 8 p.m., and that is Central Time.
Is that right? I think it's 8 to 9, John.
Maybe 8 to 9.
Yeah, I hate to correct the boss. But
okay. Well,
the boss was wrong. It's 8 to 9 Central Time.
Okay, yeah. There we go. 8 to 9 Central
All right.
Time. All right,
listen,
Michael.
Thanks for having me on, John.
Hey, well, thank you very much.
All right, appreciate it.
Appreciate
right.
it. Thanks. All right. I'm going to get through this. I'm going to kill that. Leave the pot down. All right? I'm going to go commercial free with this, and I don't know that I'm going to get all this in here. But I want to read to you Lewis T. McFadden's entry into the congressional record of his statements on the international banking system, and more importantly about the Federal Reserve inside this country, which many people will say is what has destroyed this country. And here are his words. Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks, hereinafter called the Fed. The Fed has cheated the government of these United States and the people of the United States out of enough money to pay the national debt. The depredations and inequities of the Fed has cost enough money to pay the national debt several times over. This evil institution has impoverished and ruined the people of these United States, has bankrupted itself, and has practically bankrupted our government. It has done this through the defects of the law under which it operates, through the maladministration of the law by the Fed, and through the corrupt practices of the moneyed vultures who control it. Some people who think that the Federal Reserve Banks, United States government institutions, they are private monopolies which prey upon the people of these United States for the benefit of themselves and their foreign customers, foreign and domestic speculators and swindlers, and rich and predatory money lenders. In that dark crew of financial pirates, there are those who would cut a man's throat to get a dollar out of his pocket. There are those who send money into states to buy votes to control our legislatures. There are those who maintain international propaganda for the purposes of deceiving us into granting of new concessions, which I will permit them to cover up their past misdeeds and set again in the motion their gigantic train of crime. These 12 private credit monopolies were deceitfully and disloyally foisted upon this country by the bankers who came here from Europe and repaid us our hospitality by undermining our American institutions. Those bankers took money out of the country to finance Japan and the war against Russia. They created a reign of terror in Russia with our money in order to help that war along. They instigated the separate peace between Germany and Russia, and thus drove a wedge between the Allies and World War. They financed Trotsky's passage from New York to Russia so that he might assist in the destruction of the Russian Empire. They fomented and instigated the Russian Revolution and placed a large fund of American dollars at Trotsky's disposal in one of their branch banks in Sweden so that they, through him, Russian homes might be thoroughly broken up and Russian children flung far and wide from their natural protectors. They have since begun breaking up American homes and dispersal of American children. Mr. Chairman, there should be no partisanship in matters concerning banking and currency affairs in this country, and I do not speak with any. In 1912, the National Monetary Association, under the chairmanship of the late Senator Nelson W. Aldrich, made a report and presented a vicious bill called the National Reserve Association Bill. This bill is usually spoken of as the Aldrich Bill. Senator Aldrich did not write the Aldrich Bill. He was the tool, if not the accomplice, of the European bankers who for nearly 20 years had been scheming to set up a central bank in this country and who in 1912 has spent and were continuing to spend vast sums of money to accomplish their purpose. We were opposed to the Aldrich plans for a central bank. The men who ruled the Democratic Party, when promised the people that if they were returned to power, there would be no central bank established here while they held the reins of government. 13 months later, that promise was broken, and the Wilson administration, under the tutelage of those sinister Wall Street figures who stood behind Colonel Mandel House, established here in the free country the worm-eaten monarchical institution of the King's Bank to control us from the top downward, from the cradle to the grave. The Federal Reserve Bank destroyed our old and characteristic way of doing business. It discriminated against our one-name commercial paper, the finest in the world, and set up the antiquated two-name paper, which is the present curse of this country and which has wrecked every country which has ever been given its scope. It fastened down upon the country the very tyranny from which the framers of the Constitution sought to save us. One of the greatest battles for the preservation of this republic was fought out here in Jackson's time, when the Second Bank of the United States, founded on the same false principles of those which are here exemplified in the Fed, was hurled out of existence. After that, in 1837, the country was warned against the dangers that might ensue if the predatory interest, after being cast out, should come back in disguise and unite themselves to the executive, and through him acquire control of the government. This is what the predatory interests did when they came back in the livery of hypocrisy under the false pretenses attained by the passage of the Fed. The danger the country was warned against came upon us and is shown in the long train of horrors attendant upon the affairs of the traitorous and the dishonest Fed. Look around you when you leave this chamber, and you will see evidence of this on all sides. This is an era of misery, and for the conditions that cause that misery, the Fed are fully liable. This is the era of finance crime, and in the financing of crime, the Fed does not play the part of a disinterested spectator. It has been said that the draftsman who was employed to write the text of the Aldrich Bill, because that had been drawn up by lawyers, by acceptance bankers of European origin in New York, it was a copy in general, a translation of the statutes of the Reichsbank other European central banks. $500,000 was spent in the part of the propaganda organized by these bankers for the purpose of misleading public opinion and giving Congress the impression that there was an overwhelming popular demand for it and the kind of currency that goes with it, namely an asset currency based on human debts and obligations. Dr. H. Parker Willis had been employed by Wall Street and propagandists, and when the Aldrich measure failed, he obtained employment with Carter Glass to assist in drawing the banking bill for the Wilson administration. He appropriated the text of the Aldrich bill. There is no secret about it. The text of the Federal Reserve Act was tainted from the first. In 18 years, there's a letter, by the way, a few days before the bill came to a vote, Senator Henry Cabot Lodge of Massachusetts wrote to Senator John W. Weeks as follows, and this was December 17, 1913, just a few days before the passage of the Federal Reserve Act. My dear Senator Weeks, throughout my public life, I have supported all measures designed to take the government out of the banking business. This bill puts the government into the banking business as never before in our history. The powers vested in the Federal Reserve Board seem to me highly dangerous, especially where there is a political control of the board. I should be sorry to hold stock in a bank subject to such denominations. The bill as it stands seems to me to open the way to vast inflation of the currency. I had hoped to support this bill, but I cannot vote for it because it seems to me contains features and rests upon principles in the highest degree menacing to our prosperity, to stability in business, and to the general welfare of the people of the United States. Very truly yours, Henry Cabot Lodge. In 18 years, this is McFadden speaking again in the House of Congress, in 18 years that have passed since Senator Lodge wrote that letter of warning, all his predictions have come true. The government is in the banking business as never before. Against its will, it has been made the backer of horse thieves and card sharps, bootleggers, smugglers, speculators, and swindlers in all parts of the world. Through the Fed, the riffraff of every country is operating on the public credit of the United States government. Meanwhile, and on account of it, we ourselves are in the midst of the greatest depression we have ever known. From the Atlantic to the Pacific, our country has been ravaged and laid waste by the evil practices of the Fed and its interests which control them. At no time in our history has the general welfare of the people been at a lower level or the minds of the people so full of despair. Recently in one of our states, 60,000 dwelling houses and farms were brought under the hammer in a single day. 71,000 houses and farms in Oakland County, Michigan were sold and their erstwhile owners dispossessed. The people who have thus been driven out of the wastage of the Fed, they are the victims of the Fed. Their children are the new slaves of the auction blocks in the revival of institution of human slavery. In 1913, before the Senate Banking and Currency Committee, Mr. Alexander Lassen made the following statement. The whole scheme of the Fed with its commercial paper is an impractical, cumbersome machinery. Is simply a cover to secure the privilege of issuing money and to evade payment of as much tax upon circulation as possible and then control the issue and maintain instead of reducing interest rates. It will prove to the advantage of the few and the detriment of the people. I will mean continued shortage of actual money and further extension of credits. For when there is a shortage of money, people will have to borrow to their cost. A few days before the Fed passed, Senator Root denounced the Fed as an outrage on our liberties. He predicted, and I quote, long before we wake up from our dream of prosperity through an inflated currency, our gold, which alone could have kept us from catastrophe, will have vanished and no rate of interest will tempt it to return. If ever a prophecy came true, that one did. The Fed became law the day before Christmas Eve in the year 1913, and shortly afterwards, the German international bankers, Kuhn, Loeb & Company, sent one of their partners here to run it. The Fed note is essentially unsound. It is the worst currency and the most dangerous that this country has ever known. When the proponents of the Act saw the Democratic doctrine would not permit them to let the proposed banks issue the new currency as banknotes, they should have stopped at that. They should not have foisted that kind of currency, namely an asset currency, on the United States government. They should not have made the government liable on the private debts of individuals and corporations, and at least of all, on the private debt of foreigners. The Fed notes, therefore, in form, have the same qualities of government paper money, but in substance are almost a pure asset currency possessing a government guarantee, against which contingency the government has made no provision whatsoever. The Honorable L.J. Hill, a former member of the House, said, and truly, they are obligations of the government for which the United States received nothing, and for the payment of which, at any time, it assumes the responsibility, looking to the Fed to recoup itself. If the United States is to redeem the Fed notes, when the general public finds it costs to deliver this paper to the Fed, and the government has made no provisions for redeeming for them, the first element of unsoundness is not far to seek. Before the Banking and Currency Committee, when the bill was under discussion, Mr. Crozier of Cincinnati said this, "The imperial power of elasticity of the public currency is wielded exclusively by the central corporations owned by the banks. This is a life and death power over all local banks and all business. It can be used to create or destroy prosperity, to ward off or cause stringencies and panics. By making money artificially scarce, interest rates throughout the country can be arbitrarily raised, and the bank tax on all business and cost of living increase for the profit of the banks owning these regional central banks, and without the slightest benefit to the people. The 12 corporations together cover and monopolize the use for private gain. Every dollar of the public currency and all public revenue of the United States, not a dollar can be put into circulation among the people by their government without the consent of and on the terms fixed by these 12 private monopoly trusts. In defiance of this and all other warnings, the proponents of the Fed created 12 private credit corporations and gave them absolute monopoly of currency of the United States, not the Fed notes alone, but all of other currency. The Fed Act providing ways and means by which the gold and general currency in the hands of the American people could be obtained by the Fed in exchange for Fed notes, which are not money, but mere promises to pay. Since the evil day when this was done, the initial monopoly has been extended by vicious amendments to the Fed and by unlawful and treasonable practices of the Fed. Mr. Chairman, if the Scottish distiller wishes to send a cargo of Scotch whiskey to these United States, he can draw his bill against the purchasing bootlegger in dollars, and after the bootlegger has accepted it by writing his name across the face of it, the Scotch distiller can send that bill to the nefarious open discount market in New York City, where the Fed will buy it and use it as collateral for a new issue of Fed notes. Thus, the government of these United States pay the Scotch distiller for the whiskey before it is shipped, and if it is lost on the way, or if the Coast Guard seizes it and destroys it, the Fed simply writes off the loss and the government never recovers the money that was paid to the Scotch distiller. While we are attempting to enforce prohibition here, the Fed are in the distillery business in Europe and paying bootlegger bills with public credit of these United States. Mr. Chairman, by the same process they compel our government to pay the German brewer for his beer, why should the Fed be permitted to finance the brewing industry in Germany, either in this way or the way they do by compelling small and fearful United States banks to take stock in the Eisenbeck Brewery or in the German Bank for Brewing Industries? Mr. Chairman, if Dynamite Nobel of Germany wishes to sell dynamite in Japan to use in Manchuria or elsewhere, it can draw its bill against the Japanese customers in dollars, send that bill to the nefarious open discount market in New York City, where the Fed will buy it and use it as collateral for a new issue of Fed notes, while at the same time, the Fed will be helping Dynamite Nobel by stuffing its stock into the United States banking system. Why should we send our representatives to the disarmament conference at Geneva while the Fed is still making our government pay Japanese debts to German munitions makers? Mr. Chairman, if the German wishes to raise a crop of beans and sell them to a Japanese customer, he can draw a bill against the prospective Japanese customer in dollars and have it purchased by the Fed and get the money out of this country at the expense of the American people before he's even planted the beans in the ground. Mr. Chairman, if the German people in Germany wish to export goods to South America or any other country, he can draw his bill against his customers and send it to these United States and get the money out of the country before he ships or even manufactures the goods. Mr. Chairman, Why should the currency of these United States be issued on the strength of German beer? Why should it be issued on the crop of unplanted beans to be grown in Chile for Japanese consumption? Why should these United States be compelled to issue many billions of dollars every year to pay the debts of one of the foreigners to another foreigner? Was it for this that our national bank depositors had their money taken out of our banks and shipped abroad? Was it for this that they had to lose it? Why should the public credit of these United States and likewise money belonging to our national bank depositors be used to support foreign brewers, narcotic drug vendors, whiskey distillers, wig makers, human hair merchants, Chilean bean growers to finance the munition factories of Germany and Soviet Russia? The United States has been ransacked and pillaged. Our structures have been gutted and only the walls are left standing. While being perpetrated, everything the world would rake up to sell us was brought in here at our expense by the Fed until our markets were swamped with unneeded and unwanted imported goods, priced far above their value, and made to equal the dollar volume of our honest exports, and to kill or reduce our favorite balance of trade. As agents of the foreign central banks, the Fed try by every means in their power to reduce our favorable balance of trade. They act for their foreign principal, and they accept fees from foreigners for acting against the best interest of these United States. Naturally, there has been great competition among foreigners for the favors of the Fed. What we need to do is to send the reserves of the national banks home to the people who earned and produced them and who still own them, and to the banks which were compelled to surrender them to predatory interest. Mr. Chairman, there is nothing like the Fed pool of confiscated bank deposits in the world. It is a public trough of American wealth in which the foreigners claim rights, equal to or greater than Americans. The Fed are the agents of the foreign central banks. They use our bank depositors' money for the benefit of foreign principals. They barter the public credit of the United States government and hire it to our foreigners at a profit to themselves. All of this done at the expense of the United States government and at the sickening loss to the American people. Only our great wealth enabled us to stand the drain of it as long as we did. We need to destroy the Fed wherein our national reserves are impounded for the benefit of the foreigners. We need to save America for Americans. Mr. Chairman, when you hold a $10 federal note in your hand, you are holding a piece of paper which sooner or later is going to cost the United States government $10 in gold, unless the government is obliged to go off the gold standard. It is based on Limburger cheese, or in cans purported to contain peas, but may contain salt water instead, or horse meat, illicit drugs, bootleggers' fancies, rags and bones from Soviet Russia, of which these United States imported over $1 million worth last year, or on wines, whiskey, natural gas, goat and dog fur, garlic on a string, and Bombay ducks. If you like to have paper money, which is secured by such commodities, you have it in Fed note. If you desire to obtain the thing of value upon this paper currency is based, that is, the Limburger cheese, the whiskey, the illicit drugs, or any other staples, you will have a very hard time finding them. Many of these worshipful commodities are in foreign countries. Are you going to Germany to inspect her warehouses to see if the specified things are of value are there? I do not think that you would find them there if you did go. On April 27, 1932, the Fed outfit sent $750,000 belonging to American bank depositors in gold to Germany. A week later, another $300,000 in gold was shipped to Germany. About the middle of May, $12 million in gold was shipped to Germany by the Fed. Almost every week there is a shipment of gold to Germany. These shipments are not made for profit on the exchange since the German marks are below parity with the dollar. Mr. Chairman, I believe that the national bank depositors of these United States have a right to know what the Fed are doing with their money. There are millions of national bank depositors in this country who do not know that a percentage of every dollar they deposit in a member bank of the Fed goes automatically to American agents of the foreign banks, and that all of their deposits can be paid away to foreigners without their knowledge or consent by the crooked machinery of the Fed and the questionable practices of the Fed. Mr. Chairman, The American people should be told the truth by their servants in office. In 1930, we had over $500 million outstanding daily to finance foreign goods stored in or shipped between several billion dollars. What goods are these on which the Fed yearly pledged several billions of dollars? In its yearly total, this item amounts to several billions of dollars of the public credit of these United States. What goods are those which are hidden in European and Asiatic stores have not been seen by any officer of our government, but which are being financed on the public credit of the United States government? What goods are those upon which the 17 United States governments is being obligated by the Fed to issue Fed notes to the extent of several billion dollars a year? The Fed have been international banks from the beginning, with these United States as their enforced banker and supplier of currency. But it is nonetheless extraordinary to see these 12 private credit monopolies buying the debts of foreigners against foreigners in all parts of the world and asking the government of the United States for new issues of the Fed notes in exchange for them. The magnitude of the acceptance racket, it has been developed by the Fed, their foreign correspondents, and their predatory European-born bankers who set up the Fed here and taught your own, by and of pirates, how to loot the people. I say the magnitude of this racket is estimated to be in the neighborhood of $9 billion a year. Remember, this is 1934. In the past 10 years, it is said to have amounted to $90 billion. In my opinion, it has amounted to several times that much. Coupled to this, you have the extent of billions of dollars, the gambling in the United States securities, which takes place in the same open discount market, a gambling on which the Fed is now spending $100 billion a week. Fed notes are taken from the U.S. government in unlimited quantities. It is strange that the burden of supplying these immense sums of money to the gambling fraternity, as he calls it, has at last proved too heavy for the American people to endure. Would it not be a national calamity to again bind down the burden on the backs of the American people and by means of long rawhide whip of credit masters compel them to enter another 17 years of slavery? They are trying to do it now. They are trying to take $100 billion of the public credit of the United States every week. In addition to all their seizures, and they are sending that money to the nefarious open market in a desperate gamble to reestablish their graft as a going concern. They are putting the United States government in debt to the extent of $100 billion a week, and with the money they are buying our government securities for themselves and their foreign principals. Our people are disgusted with the experiences of the Fed. The Fed is not producing a loaf of bread, a yard of cloth, a bushel of corn, or a pile of cordwood by its check-kiting operations in the money market. Mr. Speaker, on the 13th of January of this year, I addressed the House on the subject of the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. In the course of my remarks, I made the following statement. In 1928, the member banks of the Fed borrowed $60,598,690,000 from the Fed on their 15-day promissory notes. Think of it, $60 billion payable on demand in gold in the course of one single year. The actual amount of such obligations called for six times as much monetary gold as there is in the world. Such transactions represent a grant in the course of a single year of about $7 million to every member of the Fed. Is it any wonder that the American labor, which ultimately pays the cost of all banking operations of this country, has at last proved unequal to the task of supplying this huge total of cash and credit for the benefit of stock market manipulators and foreign swindlers? In 1933, the Fed presented the staggering amount of $60,598,690,000 to its member banks at the expense of the wage earners and taxpayers of these United States. In 1929, the year of the stock market crash, the Fed advanced $58 billion to its member banks. In 1930, while the speculating banks were getting out of the stock market at the expense of the general public, the Fed advanced them $13,022,782,000. This shows that when the banks were gambling on the public credit of these United States, as represented by the Fed currency, they were subsidized to any amount they required by the Fed. When the swindle began to fall, the bankers knew in advance and withdrew from the market. They got out whole skinned and left the people of these United States to pay the piper. My friend from Kansas, Mr. McGrugan, has stated that he thought the Fed lent money on rediscounting. So they do. But they lend comparatively little that way. The real discounting that they do has been called a mere penny in the slot business. It is too slow for genuine high flyers. They discourage it. They prefer to subsidize their favorite banks by making them $60 billion in advances, and they prefer to acquire assistance in a notorious open discount market in New York, where they can use it to control the price of stocks and bonds on the exchange. For every dollar they advanced on discounts in 1928, they lent $33 to their favorite banks for whom they do business of several billion dollars income tax on the profits to these United States. This is the John Law swindle all over again. The theft of Teapot Dome was trifling compared to it. What king ever robbed his subject to such an extent as the Fed has robbed us? Is it any wonder that there have been lately 90 cases of starvation in one New York hospital? Is there any wonder that the children are being abandoned? The government and the people of these United States have been swindled by swindlers, deluxe to whom the acquisition of American or a parcel of Fed notes present no more difficulty than drawing up of a worthless acceptance in a country not subject to the laws of the United States, by sharpers not subject to the jurisdiction of these United States, sharpers with strong banking fence on this side of the water, a fence acting as a receiver of worthless paper coming in from abroad, endorsing it, and getting the currency out of the Fed for it as quickly as possible, exchanging that currency for gold, and in turn transmitting the gold to its foreign confederates. Such were the exploits of Ivor Kruger, Mr. Hoover's friend, and his rotten Wall Street bankers. Every dollar of the billions Kruger and his gang drew out of the country on acceptance was drawn from the government and the people of the United States through the Fed. The credit of the United States government was peddled to him by the Fed for their own private gain. That is what the Fed has been doing for many years. They have been peddling the credit of the government and the signature of this government to the swindlers and speculators of all nations. That is what happens when a country forsakes its constitution and gives its sovereignty over to public currency to private interests. Give them the flag and they will sell it. The nature of Kruger's organized swindle and the bankrupt conditions of Kruger's combine was known last June when Hoover sought to exempt Kruger's loan to Germany of $125 million from the operation of the Hoover moratorium. The bankrupt condition of Kruger's swindle was known her last summer when $30 million was taken from the American taxpayers by certain bankers in New York for the ostensible purpose of permitting Kruger to make a loan to Columbia. Columbia never saw that money. The nature of Kruger's swindle was known here in January when he visited his friend Mr. Hoover at the White House. It was known here in March before he went to Paris and committed suicide. Mr. Chairman, I think the people of the United States are entitled to know how many billions of dollars were placed at the disposal of Kruger and his gigantic combine by the Fed, and to know how much of our government's currency was issued and lost in financing of that great swindle in the years during which the Fed took over and care of Kruger's requirements. A few days ago, the President of the United States, with a white face and shaking hands, went before the Senate on behalf of the moneyed interest and asked the Senate to levy a tax on the people so that the foreigners might know that these United States would pay its debts to them. Most Americans thought it was the other way around. What does these United States owe foreigners? When and by whom was this debt incurred? It was incurred by the Fed when they peddled the signature of the government to foreigners for a price. It was what the United States government has to pay to redeem the obligations of the Fed. Are you going to let these thieves get off scot-free? Is there one law for the looter who drives up to the door of the United States Treasury in his limousine and another for the United States veteran who are sleeping on the floor of a dilapidated house on the outskirts of Washington? The Baltimore and Ohio Railroad is here asking for a large loan from the people, and the wage earners and the taxpayers of these United States. It is begging for a handout from the government. It is standing cap in hand at the door of the RFC, where all the jackals have been gathered for the feast. It is asking for the money that was raised from the people by taxation and wants this money of the poor for the benefit of Kuhn, Loeb and Company, the German international bankers. Is there one law for the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad and another for the hungry veterans it threw off its freight cars the other day? Is there only one law for the sleek and prosperous swindlers who call themselves bankers and another law for the soldiers who defended the flag? The RFC is taking over these worthless securities from the investment trust with the United States Treasury money at the expense of the American people and the wage earners. It will take 20 years to redeem our government, 20 years of penal servitude to pay off the gambling debts of these traitorous Fed and to vast flood of American wages and savings, bank deposits, and United States government credit for which the Fed exported out of this country to their foreign principals. The Fed lately conducted an anti-hoarding campaign here. They took that extra money, which they had persuaded the American people to put into the banks. They sent it to Europe along with the rest. It had lasted several months. They have spent $1,300,000 in gold to their foreign, sent $1,300,000 in gold to their foreign employers, their foreign masters, and every dollar of that gold belonged to the people of the United States and was unlawfully taken from them. Mr. Chairman, within the limits of time allowed, I cannot enter into a particularized discussion of the Fed. I have singled out the Fed currency for a few remarks because there has lately been some talk here of fiat money. What kind of money is being pumped into the open discount market and through its foreign channels and stock exchanges? Mr. Mills of the Treasury has spoken here of his horror of the printing presses and its horror of dishonest money. He has no horror of dishonest money. If he had, he would be no party to the present gambling of the Fed in the nefarious open discount market of New York, a market in which the sellers are represented by 10 discount corporations owned and organized by the very banks which own and control the Fed. Fiat money indeed. What Mr. Willis is fighting for is the preservation, whole and entire, of the banker's monopoly of all the currencies of the United States government. Mr. Chairman, last December, I introduced a resolution here asking for the examination and audit of the Fed and all related matters. If the House sees fit to make such an investigation, the people of these United States will obtain information of great value. This is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Consequently, nothing should be concealed from the people. The man who deceives the people is a traitor to these United States. The man who knows or suspects that a crime has been committed and who conceals and covers up that crime is an accessory to it. Mr. Speaker, it is a monstrous thing for this great nation of people to have its destinies presided over by traitorous government board acting in secret concert with their international usurers. Every effort has been made by the Fed to conceal its power. But the truth is, the Fed has usurped the government. It controls everything here, and it controls all of our foreign relations. It makes and breaks governments at will. No man and no body of men is more entrenched in power than the arrogant credit monopoly which operate the Fed. What national government has permitted the Fed to steal from the people should now be restored to the people. The people have a valid claim against the Fed. If that claim is enforced, the Americans will not need to stand in the bread lines or to suffer and die of starvation in the streets. Women will be saved, families will be kept together, and the American children will not be dispersed and abandoned. Here is a Fed note. Immense numbers of the notes are now held abroad. I am told that they amount upwards of $1 billion. They constitute a claim against our government and likewise a claim against our people's money to the extent of $1,300,000,000. And again, keep in mind, this is 1934, which has within the last few months been shipped abroad to redeem Fed notes and to pay other gambling debts of the traitorous Fed. The greatest part of our money stock has been shipped to other lands. Why should we promise to pay the debts of foreigners to foreigners? Why should the Fed be permitted to finance our competitors in all parts of the world? Do you know why the tariff was raised? It was raised to shut out a flood of Fed goods pouring in here from every quarter of the globe. Cheap goods, produced cheaply, paid by foreign labor on unlimited supplies of money and credit sent to the out of this country by the dishonest and unscrupulous Fed. The Feds are spending $100 million a week by buying government securities in open market and are making a great bid for foreign business. They are trying to make rates so attractive that the human hair merchants and the distillers and other business entities in foreign lands will come here and hire more of the public credit of the United States government to pay the Fed outfit for getting it for them. Mr. Chairman, when the Fed was passed, the people of these United States did not perceive that a world system was being set up here, which would make the savings of the American school teacher available to a narcotic drug vendor in Acapulco. They did not perceive that these United States was being lowered to the position of a coolie country, which has nothing but raw material and heart, that Russia was destined to supply the manpower, and that this country was to supply the financial power to an international superstate, a superstate controlled by international bankers and internationalist industrialists acting together to enslave the world for their own pleasure. The people of these United States are being greatly wronged. They have been driven from their employments. They have been dispossessed from their homes. They have been evicted from their rented quarters. They have lost their children. They have been left to suffer and die for lack of shelter, food, clothing, and medicine. The wealth of these United States and the working capital have been taken away from them and has either been locked in the vaults of certain banks and the great corporations are exported to foreign countries for the benefit of foreign customers of these banks and corporations. So far as the people of the United States are concerned, the cupboard is bare. The sack of the United States by the Fed is the greatest crime in history. Mr. Chairman, a serious situation confronts the House of Representatives today. We are trustees of the people, and the rights of the people are being taken away from them. Through the Fed, the people are losing their rights guaranteed them by the Constitution. Their property has been taken from them without due process of law. Mr. Chairman, common decency requires us to examine the public accounts of the government and see what crimes against the public welfare have been committed. I have to stop here. There is a little bit more to this, but I'm not going to have, if I would have had the other 20 minutes available, and we wouldn't have bitched and whined about synagogues in this country, I could have gotten through this whole thing. But do you understand what you're seeing taking place today? And from the traitors in the White House, in the Oval Office, that absolutely, positively know who runs this country? They are all accomplices to this. Every member of Congress, every member of the Senate, every member in Bush's cabinet are aware of this. They are accomplices if they let this crime continue one more day in this country. Ladies and gentlemen, it is our country. There's only one man that will go against the Fed Reserve. That's why he's not given the time. That's why he's not being promoted. And that's why he's being shut out by the very same people that control all the money and the news media in this country, Mr. Ron Paul. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow.
A message for all homeowners and prospective homeowners out there. If you reside in Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, California, or Utah, we can help you with financing the purchase of a new home or refinancing your existing mortgage. We now have a wide array of lenders for your purchase or refinancing needs. If you are looking for a cash-out refinance from an adjustable to a fixed-rate loan, paying down credit card debt, consolidating the installment or other debt, or been wanting to invest in the safe haven of gold in the silver market, but you've been sitting on the fence waiting for the right time. Whatever your reason, give RBN a call and ask to talk to our mortgage professional. He can help you find a plan that fits your needs while he walks you through the process very simply and easily. You couldn't choose a better time to pay down debt or purchase gold and silver. And not only do you accomplish your goal, but you also help to support RBN in continuing to voice the truth. Don't wait any longer. Call us now at 1-800-724-2719. Again, that's 1-800-724-2719.